defects in the delivery of health care are still all too common. And yet, unlike faulty brakes or sticking gas pedals, an awful lot that shouldn't happen to patients escapes the headlines and does not become the stuff of massive recalls. Now, no one is arguing for anything close to that for health care, but what if we decided to take Toyota's recent serious car troubles as one huge teachable moment and wake-up call for health care? What are the lessons and underlying issues we should be paying attention to? Well, hello and welcome to WIHI, a free online audio discussion from the Institute for Healthcare Improvement. As of this week, we've been on the air, so to speak, for 1 year. So thanks to all of you for your support and happy anniversary, WIHI. I'm your host and moderator, Madge Kaplan. I'm also IHI's Director of Communications. There's a rich historical relationship between the Toyota production system and the principles of healthcare improvement. And the three guests with us on this edition of WIHI know this history and relationship well. Now to introductions, and I want to remind everyone there's much more information about each of these gentlemen on the WIHI web pages. You can also put in a Google search of each of them and find out quite a bit as well. Joining WIHI from Seattle, I believe, today is Dr. Gary Kaplan. He's the chairman and CEO of the Virginia Mason Health System, and that's a position he's held since 2000. Gary is also a member of the IHI Board of Trustees. The Toyota production system knocked Gary and other leaders of Virginia Mason upside the head about a decade ago, and that's a story that's wonderfully told in the book, The Best Practice, by Charles Kenny. And there's a little nice image of that. By the way, there are a little over 800 of you who've gotten on the program today, which is terrific. I believe most of you are actually looking at the computer, but any images I refer to can also be downloaded at the end of the program today as well. Anyway, Gary Kaplan's been thinking a lot about some new lessons from Toyota. Welcome to WIHI.
Thank you, Madge.
Okay.
Great to be with you all.
All right. Are you indeed in Seattle today?
I am in Seattle today.
Okay, great.
And that sun is shining.
Good. Okay. Ditto here in Cambridge. It's early Friday morning. Good morning in Melbourne, Australia. And that's where we find Dr. John Toussaint. He was the CEO of ThetaCare in Wisconsin for 8 years, where he took the fundamentals of the Toyota production system and created something called the ThetaCare Improvement System, or TIS. John is now CEO Emeritus of ThetaCare and also CEO of a timely endeavor called the ThetaCare Center for Healthcare Value. And he also has a thing or two to say about achieving higher quality and lower costs. Much of it you'll find in this forthcoming book out in June called On the Mend. And then we have an image of that as well. Welcome to WIHI, John Toussaint. And is it indeed a little after 6 in the morning there?
Good day, everyone, from Australia.
Okay.
nice to be with you.
Okay, very good. And in keeping with our book theme, I guess, here's a photo of Stephen Spear's latest book, The High Velocity Edge. Steve is a senior fellow at IHI and a senior lecturer at MIT Sloan School of Management. He's a leading thinker on organizations and change, and we want to welcome Steve Spear. Steve's got a lot of different outlets these days, as do all our guests today, blogs and such. And again, we've captured a lot of that in the resource document. So if you'd like to continue following what these fine people have to say after WIHI today, you'll be able to do that. So here's what's going to happen. I'm going to be talking with our guests for about the next 20 minutes or so, and then we'll open up for your questions and comments. And I'm going to start with Dr. John Toussaint all the way in Australia. And hopefully you've had enough coffee for this first question. And that is, why should healthcare leaders, clinicians, improvers, an awful lot of the people, we've got about 900 and change going up here on today's program, why should they care about what happens at Toyota, good or bad?
Well, I think Toyota has set the direction for all of us who are on the lean journey. And you know, we all watch them, we all try to emulate them, and so, you know, this latest snafu is that there's a lot to be learned, and I think that Mr. Toyota in the Wall Street Journal article a couple months ago basically apologized to the world for sort of getting off track. You know, he said in that article that we need to go back to basics because we lost our way. We lost our way related to focusing on continuous improvement and respect for people. Those are the two fundamental pillars of the Toyota production system. And he committed to that Toyota would find their way again and get back to the basics that we've all learned from. So it just proves that, you know, the lean journey is a challenge for all of us, to even Toyota, to stay focused and to stay disciplined about implementing.
Okay, Dr. John Toussaint, I want to ask you a follow-up question for perhaps at least some people who've joined today. Many people are great students of what we're talking about today. But could you just tick off some of the key principles healthcare has basically integrated into improvement by studying Toyota so carefully over the last decade and even longer, really? Just maybe some of the key ideas.
Yeah, well, you know, certainly for healthcare, you know, one of the major things is the collapse of time. So what we're trying to do is take the waste out of systems, and as we take waste out, we collapse time. So wait times go down, times waiting for code STEMI go down, and you know, we're able to actually provide more timely care. I think the other key thing is that, you know, what we're doing is every process is we look at it in terms of, is it adding value to the patient or not. So we're trying to take those non-value added steps out of patient care, and as we take non-value added steps out of patient care, we reduce errors. And, you know, the fewer the handoffs we have, the fewer opportunities we have for errors. So we're really trying to take the waste out of the system and collapse time to provide better value, which drives lower cost to our patients.
Okay, thank you very much. If you're just joining us, this is WIHI. You were just listening to Dr. John Toussaint, who's joining us today from Melbourne, Australia. Normally, he's in Wisconsin. And we're talking about lessons from Toyota, the most recent lessons we can learn from their stumbles. This is Madge Kaplan, and I've also got Steve Speer and Gary Kaplan with me today. Steve Speer, let me turn to you. We hear so much about lean principles in healthcare improvement. It's saying lean is almost as common as saying quality. I'm sometimes curious whether or not healthcare has been as sold on this fundamental aspect of the Toyota production system as it sometimes appears, or have people been skeptical all along and maybe now they're even more skeptical?
Oh, Max, thanks for the question and thanks for inviting me in today.
Uh-huh.
So in answering your question, I think it's important to first answer a very important question, which is why look at Toyota? And the answer to that is Toyota went from being an exceptionally poor car company in the late 50s, early 1960s, to one which, when people took a look at Toyota again in the mid-80s, had moved itself from making poor quality cars very inefficiently to being able to produce twice the cars every day with half the people, half the space, half the material on hand, and half the capital equipment. It was half in, twice out. When people then took a look and asked what Toyota was doing, in that first pass, there were tremendous lessons from Toyota into healthcare. One of the things Toyota had learned to do very, very well is take the huge variety of specialties and disciplines which are involved in the design and production of cars and integrate those into a very harmonious, well-choreographed system. So they had gone from things isolated in pods of specialties and technical discipline to these well-integrated systems. And when people outside of Toyota started practicing that, they got very vast improvement. This would be in the late 1980s and early 1990s. And when we look at healthcare today, many healthcare institutions are in an organizational form quite similar to U.S. manufacturing in the 80s, which is these stovepipe silos of specialty by function and discipline, without very good systems to mesh those various disciplines together into service lines that will deliver great quality care to many people affordably. So there's still a lot to be learned from Toyota, even on that first pass.
Okay. That's really a good point, and I think it's a great tee to Gary Kaplan, because Virginia Mason really went to town, so to speak, on the Toyota production system in sort of making it its own. So your tenure as CEO dovetails with this early commitment to study the Toyota production system, and we're not just talking about some senior leader sitting down to listen to a few lectures or read a few books, but it was really almost total immersion. So for those who may not be familiar with your story or the chapter in The Best Practice by Charles Kenny, maybe you could just, I have to ask everybody to briefly tell us this long story, but briefly kind of give us a sense of how did Virginia Mason cotton on to this so much, and I'm curious what sorts of discussions are happening now at the health system.
Sure. Well, thank you. It's always a challenge to distill right. 9 or 10 years into a couple minutes, but really this work began with a new strategic plan that was commissioned by our community board, our health system board. They challenged us around understanding who our customer was. We looked at that carefully and realized that our behavior suggested our customer was the doctors and the nurses and all of us in healthcare, but in reality, it needed to be about the patient. We crafted a new vision for Virginia Mason to become the quality leader. We put in place new compacts and had long, months-long conversations establishing clear expectations around the people who work here, particularly the physicians, but also the leaders with the organization, a reciprocal kind of agreement and conversation. And then we really said, how are we possibly going to accomplish and execute on this new strategic vision? We had this these foundational principles in place, but we did not have a management method, and we came at it believing we needed a method. So that's when we really learned from our colleagues at Boeing just up the street about the success they'd been having using the Toyota production system, using Lean, studied it, read about it, visited some Lean manufacturing companies in our community and across the country. And then we decided to take the plunge, and we said, if you want to be a senior leader at Virginia Mason, you will join us on a two-week trip to Japan. And it was quite amazing. It was getting ready to go, studying to be prepared to go, and then the deep immersion that occurred to department chairs, vice presidents, 32 people, all senior leaders. We came home totally transformed. And what we saw was the opportunity to bring these manufacturing principles to our patients and our organization and our industry, and came to believe that the only way to do that was to jump in with both feet. Some people called it a potential betting the farm or a potential career-limiting move. But I'm still here, and our leadership team is still essentially intact. We said, we came home from that first trip and said, this will be our management system. And that was a very important step for us. What we call the Virginia Mason Production System is our management system. And what that meant was that we weren't going to dabble. We weren't going to focus on some projects and see where it went, but we were going to focus on training all 5,000 of our people in the language, in the methods, the tools. We created a cadre of over 100 what we call certified leaders to teach, and to and we made it a requirement for executives that not only do they become certified, but they maintain certification by leading workshops every year, and that includes myself and all members of the strategic of the senior leadership team. And then finally, we came to really understand what it meant as a management system by using the methods and tools in our strategic planning process, our goal setting process, our accounting processes, and really in all aspects of daily work life.
So, Gary, what do you do then? I imagine nobody's handing in their badges at Virginia Mason, but what has what's gone on at Toyota the last several months? How has that stirred things up, given this commitment, this deep commitment that you have?
Well, I think the first thing, well, leadership certainly came together very quickly to understand what we needed to be saying, what we thought. First, to understand what we thought about what we were hearing, what we were reading. And there certainly was and continues to be to some extent a bit of a media frenzy. But the first thing we did in our minds was separate the Toyota production system from the Toyota Motor Company. The Toyota Motor Company is the organization that's been at it the longest and is really taking it as far as it's come. But there are many, many successful companies around the world employing all of these principles that remain sound. And so as we've been asked questions both inside and outside, we've made clear that distinction. We also said, here, what a wonderful learning opportunity. You know, we all learn from our own mistakes, and one of the adages of lean is fail forward fast, so that it's okay to fail, because without failure you're not taking any risk, but it's what you do and get up quickly. But we said, what a wonderful gift to be able to learn from the failings or the missteps of someone other than ourselves. And so we really began to explore what we could about this, and many of the points raised by Steve, but how did they take their eye off the ball? How did they lose sight of the prize? How did they expand too fast? What was it in the culture that allowed this to happen? And in effect, they strayed from the core principles of the Toyota production system. So it's really heightened the vigilance here at Virginia Mason.
Very, very interesting. Thank you. You're listening to Gary Kaplan from the Virginia Mason Health System. This is WIHI. I'm Madge Kaplan. Steve Spear is also with us, and he's multitasking and using chat in a nice way, sort of layering in questions, answering some questions already. John Toussaint is also with us from Melbourne, Australia today. Normally, he's at the Theta Care Center for Value in Wisconsin. I want to ask you, John, I imagine there's some parallels to it at ThetaCare with what Gary was talking about at Virginia Mason, but maybe keeping that in mind, what is it that sort of stirred the pot most recently in your organization in terms of trying to draw some lessons from this most recent experience at Toyota?
Well, it's been interesting to go back and look at the, We do Hoshin planning, or have done Hoshin planning for years with the use of A3s. And
what is Hoshin planning? What does that mean?
Hoshin planning is the process of taking the strategy from really the senior management team throughout the organization, so that all employees and all physicians understand what the core priorities are and strategy is for the system. And this is another Toyota tool that is a senior management tool, and so we use the A3 thinking as the way to deploy those strategies across the organization. And I think there's been a lot of conversation around one of those what we call mother A3s, which is growth. And going back to look at what Toyota just basically outgrew itself, and a number of the experts that have studied Toyota were concerned that they couldn't keep up with the growth as it related to, you know, the quality side of things, that they didn't have enough senseis, that they didn't have enough people that really understood the Toyota production system as they opened these plants all over the certainly all over North America and all over the world. And there's speculation that this growth was that they just grew too fast. And so it's been interesting to have that conversation within ThetaCare too, is that maybe it's delivery of the value to the customer that's more important than growth. So I think, you know, we're all sort of rethinking. Okay, so what were the core components of the fact that Toyota got off track from a strategic perspective? I agree with Gary that, you know, you do have to separate these things because the Toyota production system is different than the Toyota strategy. And so the strategy, many people believe, is, you know, what has created these defects.
Steve Spear, I know you've been you're busily sort of helping us filling in some history here. I guess a question for you, given Gary and John, they're probably a little bit of soul searching and reflection. What do you think healthcare organizations should be thinking about? John just ticked off thinking very hard about your growth strategy and not taking your eye off the ball as to fundamentals. I think in terms of real value and what it means to be keeping your eye, I guess, on patient care. What do you think healthcare organizations should be thinking about?
Yeah, picking up on John's term on keeping your eye on the fundamentals. So it's very important to recognize what the fundamental is for Toyota, both in terms of its success and these stumbles it's had reported over the last several months. So, again, back to Toyota's history, it went from being an incredibly crummy car company to the best in the world by the 21st century. It did so because it had mastered a set of skills most other organizations don't have. So most organizations have the set of skills in the auto industry, for example, around combustion engineering, engine design, transmissions, powertrain, body styling, and all of that stuff. Everyone's got that. What Toyota had developed and mastered was a basic science on how you design systems and operate them, how you improve them when they have their inevitable breaks along the way, a basic science of how you share and take local discoveries and make them broadly applied, and then how you have leadership engaged in the development of those other skills, of those other capabilities. So we really have to boil down what is absolutely fundamentally critical to Toyota is the discovery of that basic science and the cultivation of skills in that basic science throughout its own organization and that of its suppliers. John, I think, is dead on by saying what ended up happening is that Toyota took advantage of marvelous growth opportunities, China, Eastern Europe, and all this other stuff in the late 80s, late 80s, in the 1990s and into about 2000, 2001. With that, probably inadvertently overtaxed its internal capacity to develop people. And if you take a closer look at the problems being reported today, it's not brand new stuff. It's stuff designed 3, 4, and 5 years ago around this time when people would have been joining Toyota, joining the supplier network, and not having been grounded in these skills, which brings us to the lesson to be learned here. If you run a healthcare organization, it's, of course, fundamentally important to have great skills in orthopedics and radiology and all these other medical professions. In addition, if you really want to succeed and achieve breakthrough quality, access, and affordability, these skills in the basic science of systems are absolutely fundamental if you're going to succeed. Part one of that is that these skills are very, very powerful. The other is that they need constant cultivation. Right. And so I think Toyota's history from 1958 up to about 2001-2 very strongly emphasizes that first part, and their experience more recently emphasizes the second part of that message.
Mm-hmm. So go ahead. Who wants to jump right in? Go right ahead.
That in keeping and consistent with what both John and Steve have brought up, one of the key management principles is to be visible on the Gemba. Go and see for yourself. Toyota expanded, as has been described, so rapidly beyond their ability to both train talent but also to keep their processes within the line of sight. So not having trained talent available to be on the Gemba and to respond, to workers' concerns, which I think really ran up against their own philosophy and their own principles and how this was minimized and swept underground. I think there's multifactorial reasons for that, but one of which was related to the rapid expansion.
Well, what about, I guess maybe, thank you, Gary. John Toussaint, let me go back to you. I mean, if you look around at a healthcare organization today and everybody is constantly, well, let's say the improver organization right now, is got dashboards and sort of looking, you know, at quite a bit right now. How would you recognize, I don't want to overplay this, but a sort of Toyota situation in the making in a healthcare organization? Where would you begin to be, if, sort of see weakened things in the system?
Well, you know, I think Gary's absolutely right that you know, if we're not out on the Gemba, I mean, our executive team in my tenure was at the Gemba, you know, once a week or more often than that, and that's the CEO and senior executives going to the place of work where value is created for the patient and trying to deeply understand what the barriers the staff were facing. And I think that, you know, sometimes we get sort of excited about the new shiny object and we lose focus on what's most important, which is, you know, what are the problems our staff are facing and how do we remove the barriers for them to solve those problems, and how do we assure that defects are being identified and that the processes are being continuously improved. And these shiny objects can come by sometimes and take us away from the Gemba, take us away, you know, as Mr. Toyota said, take us away from the basics. And we're off doing all these other goofy things that don't matter, when what we need to be is at the bedside trying to understand how to improve the process. So I think that the way you know that is that, you know, is you look at your management team and where are they spending their time? If they're spending more of their time in their office or in meetings, and less of their time, you know, on the front line trying to identify defects and solve problems, you know, that's really the thing that I would look at as the first sign that the system is unraveling.
So when you what give me an example, John Toussaint, about what's a shiny thing that might cause people to get distracted or maybe take their eye off of other things?
Well, what, you know, how many things do we report to the government today? You know, 100, 150. How many more things can we come up with that we, you know, overburden our staff with trying to measure or trying to do? I mean, you know, frankly, when I was a CEO, I basically decided that we've seen the enemy and the enemy's us, and that the enemy's me, because I'm continually adding more things onto everybody's plate. And so when we started to go to the Gemba and started to understand that the only thing that matters is what's happening at the bedside, it really helped us refocus on the fact that, you know, all of these new things coming down the pike and new projects and new ideas and all this kind of stuff is really distracting. It's the shiny objects. And what we need to do is stop overburdening our staff and our managers and start focusing on what's adding value to the patient and completely focus on what adds value to the patient. And you don't do that unless you get out of your office and go to the bedside and have a series of questions that you're constantly asking to figure out, you know, where the defects are and to figure out where the barriers are for our staff to be successful.
Go ahead, Gary.
Uh-huh. A comment or two on that. You know, going to the Gemba can be a free-form exercise, and there's certainly value in that, just being seen, being visible, asking questions, using your power of observation. But we've also created a program here at Virginia Mason of required executive and leader rounding that is quite planful, where we've actually applied the tools of standard work to ensure that everyone rounds, and that everyone rounds at least weekly and many more than weekly, and then with questions that are critical that must be asked of both staff and patients, and centralized deployment so that we're sure that we round not just in our own areas of responsibility, but in other areas of responsibility, and bring so-called outside eyes so that you're not so acclimated to a process that you're unable to see the defects and see the waste. The other thing I would add is I think that data is critically important, and that one of the ways, the early warning signs to your original question, Madge, is looking for trends, looking for early trends.
Right.
Having data acquiring techniques and strategies in real time that then helps to see emerging trends very quickly, and deploying mistake proofing or other types of solutions to try to stop the trend. I think if Toyota had picked up on the signals earlier, that they may have been able to prevent much of this from getting as big as it has.
All right. Thank you so much. That's Gary Kaplan. Steve Spear is with us. John Toussaint. You know, Steve has already started to answer an interesting question, which I think is a great one, teeing off of what all of you have said, which is, what's the metric, what's the dashboard that helps you recognize, you know, distraction, getting too engaged with the shiny new object, the fact that people aren't being developed, et cetera, et cetera. So while I agree with you, and I bet many people would, Gary, that we got to be really careful about how many, or actually John was talking about how many new things to measure, somebody is asking, do we have a dashboard that begins to see this kind of slippage? And why don't I have Steve answer that, and then I'm going to have Jesse McCall jump in here, and some people seem to already know what they're doing with chat, but we'll have Jesse remind you. Steve?
Yeah, thanks very much for the question, both in the chat and now. So I'll keep coming back to this basic point, and I think it really emphasizes this notion of people being distracted by shiny objects and, you know, overwhelming complexity of this tool or that tool. Fundamentally, the way you achieve exceptional performance in any organization dealing with the complexity of the science, technology, and systems that's typical of healthcare, the only way is by generating and then sustaining very high-speed, broad-based, nonstop improvement and innovation. There's no other way, because with such complexity, you're never going to get it right on the first try, so you have to discover your way to perfection. So that said, how do you discover your way to perfection? And the key has to be the cultivation and application of these four skills on how do you design something so you capture your best knowledge to date, but also as you operate something, you see problems in your design. That's skill one. Skill two is when you see a problem, how do you solve the problem so it's not slapdash solution onto symptom, but it's actually disciplined scientific method or diagnosis to treatment, so you not only deal with the symptom, but you get to the root cause of the ignorance you didn't you had going into the situation. Skill three, the rigor of when you have a discovery locally of sharing it systemically so that it has broad application. And then skill four, the rigor with which you lead in an engaged fashion, much like John and Gary were talking through this, the going and seeing the Gemba, being on the shop floor, being at the place of work to engage with people doing work in service to creating value. So tying those four skills together in a dashboard, the way you see if an organization is making progress is looking one day, then the next, and saying, are more people with more rigor and more consistency designing their work in this rigorous way, improving their work in this rigorous way, sharing what they've learned in this rigorous way, and are we seeing leadership engage in a more rigorous fashion? And if you see those things, then you can probably have pretty good confidence that you're getting to the point of being able to generate and sustain this broad-based, high-speed, nonstop improvement and innovation. If you go one day to the next, one week to the next, and you don't see any change in the breadth and the depth of that rigor, then you have probably good cause for pessimism.
Okay. All right. Well, I don't want to pause on a pessimistic note, but those are very interesting principles, and maybe we can even make them a little more concrete. Jesse McCall, remind everybody about chatting, and then we'll really I'll step back a little bit and try and get in as many questions and comments as all of our participants have.
Thanks, Madge. So to chat, you just select the recipient of the chat in that drop-down menu, and as you can see on the screen here, we'd like you to send those posed to all participants so that everyone is able to see what your question is. We've had a few come in already that Steve's been addressing. One that he didn't that I'd like to just pull out from Doug Neal. Given the failure, how difficult is it going to be for Toyota to get their eye back on the ball? What are their first steps aside from the commercials that I'm sure we've all seen?
Okay. Well, welcome your comments and questions. Steve is actually pretty good at real-time typing, Gary and John Toussaint. You're welcome to do that as well, but not expected. We'll try and call these out. All right, why don't I throw this, to John in terms of your sense of kind of Toyota sort of getting back on track. And feel free to make any analogy to healthcare as well. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, you know, the Toyota production system is clearly part of the DNA of the people at Toyota, or at least many of the people at Toyota. So, I mean, if the leaders get back on track of leading the way they need to lead, you know, I can't imagine that Toyota won't recover actually fairly quickly and get back on track. I mean, you know, those of us that have been involved in the development of the cultures of our organizations to that of continuous improvement know how hard it is to build that that DNA into the culture of continuous improvement, and it takes many years. I'm sure Toyota still has it, and getting back to the basics, as Mr. Toyota said in that opinion article a few months ago, is what it's going to take, and I'm sure they still have what it takes to climb out of this mess and continue on as a great company.
Let me a quick answer from Steve, and then there's a great question that I want to get in here from Franco Herrera. Go ahead, Steve.
Oh yeah, Matt, just hear me the question again. The phone broke up just a little bit.
So that's all right. It was more a question about what it's going to take for Toyota to get back on track.
Yeah. No, got it. So here's the thing about Toyota. Again, what we're seeing today in terms of product difficulty is a lagging indicator of a problem. So, I'll keep coming back to this point, is that Toyota's success depended on the cultivation and application of these four skills on process system design, problem solving and improvement, knowledge sharing and leadership. Look at all the examples on recalls and whatnot. These things all have their history, 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago. Now, it's noteworthy that within Toyota, people became concerned about the time and cost associated with cultivating these skills as Toyota had traditionally done it. And just by quick movie reference, the approach very much was a mentor-apprenticeship, Karate Kid-like style. I myself went through that. My friends have gone through that. And you learn it deeply, but, boy, it takes a lot of time and can be very painful. So as just one example, starting around the early 2000s, Toyota realized that a real linchpin in this skill cultivation was these group leaders. These are people 2-3 levels removed from the direct work of the organization, 10, 15, 20 years within the Toyota network. And these folks are really the masters meant at cultivating these skills and acculturating people to this Toyota production system. Toyota realized that you had to figure out how to clone group leaders more quickly to succeed. And so even 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago, Toyota started this process of decoding great group leaders, creating the standard work, the choreography, the recipe for making great group leaders, and teaching those skills not only within Toyota Japan, but Toyota North America and around the world. And the thing is, like everything else, there's the action and the lag until the effect takes place.
Right.
Toyota has seen this problem and is actively cultivating mechanisms to build these skills more quickly.
Okay, so that's an interesting point. Franco Herrera, though, and I think I'll throw this to Gary Kaplan, it's a great question sort of teeing off all of this and Steve's reference to sort of a deep sort of training Karate Kid style. Not everyone has the resources or the opportunity to go to Japan and train in the Toyota production system. For example, I work for a safety net hospital in California. So give me some sense of how do I find this more locally and that or maybe less expensive, he's saying, and maybe as transformational. I also want to remind everybody that we have a lot of interesting resources on that we'll be posting to the website, and we recognize that we're jumping into a very kind of a deep subject, and there is a lot of teaching on lean and all kinds of things, and Vicki Minden has a great document that will be posted to the website. But Gary, talk about that. I mean, not everybody's going to go off to Japan.
Sure, and we realize that, and I would say you don't need to go to Japan. In fact, I would say that most who've had some success, major success or even limited success, have not been to Japan. I think what for us that represented was what I call a see, feel, or a self-discovery, a very emotional experience that we felt we needed at the time and continue to feel adds benefit. But there are lots of other ways to do that. As you mentioned, Madge, there are a lot of educational materials. There are a lot of manufacturing companies that use lean in most of our communities across the country. There's many consulting companies. There's the Lean Enterprise Institute. There's the IHI. We at Virginia Mason have our Virginia Mason Institute. So there's a lot of different ways to accumulate knowledge, to get experience. I think you have to, though, remember that in order to really have sustainable change of the magnitude that's required to put in place the Toyota production system into a healthcare organization, you need to have the deep commitment of senior leaders.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I can't emphasize that enough. And
right.
So we have, and the whole thing is, I think the same is true of the quality improvement movement in general, that we have a whole cadre of middle management and quality improvement experts that all too often but up against resistance or lack of it or inattention from senior leadership. That's how resources get allocated. That's how cultures change. That's how signals are sent that penetrate an entire organization. So I would encourage whatever level of commitment an organization's ready to make and whatever level of learning an organization's ready to make, work hard to engage the most senior leaders.
All right. Thank you, Gary Kaplan. Is that John? Go ahead. I had a question for you, but
can
go
I
right
jump in?
Yep.
Can I just jump in on that one?
Go ahead.
I agree that there are great manufacturing companies in this country now that you can visit. That's how we did it. We didn't go to Japan at all. We actually went to a snowblower company 40 miles down the road in Wisconsin. And took all the senior team there, got out on the floor, built snow blowers. I mean, you can do it that way. But, the point is today, 10 years later, after Gary and others and us and have done this, I mean, there are great healthcare places you can go and visit now.
Right.
And so the Healthcare Value Leaders Network is a series of organizations around the country that are focused on this. Gary Shop's focused on this. There's a lot of ways to actually see the Toyota production system real life in healthcare now. So you don't necessarily have to, go see it in manufacturing, although I still learn the most going to great manufacturing companies like Autoliv and Danaher and Toyota.
Thanks, right. John. And let me just ask you a question, and maybe everyone can take a stab at it. Linda is asking a question. She says, the Toyota principles are designed for a fairly stable manufacturing environment where the product is relatively stable and processes controllable. However, she says, patients are not stable products, and healthcare is far more complex than manufacturing. These are her thoughts. How have you been able to adopt the Toyota methods effectively to complex, unpredictable ways of healthcare? John, I'll let you sort of jump in that, and maybe we'll go back to Gary and then Steve. Thoughts about that?
I think
maybe you don't share the assumption, but what do you think?
I don't agree with this notion that somehow healthcare is so different that these basic principles don't apply. Healthcare deals with multiple problems or patients that have multiple problems that are very sick, but the reality is that the core components of standard work, taking waste out of the system, of creating stability by standardization. I mean, basically, most processes in healthcare are chaotic. Everybody does it their own way. And until we stabilize the process, we can't improve it, whether it's for, you know, a simple, you know, sore throat in an outpatient visit or, you know, multi-system organ failure patient in the ICU. The reality is we still need to have, you know, a stabilized process, which means, you know, standard work for the care of that patient so that we can improve the work. If every pulmonologist does ICU care completely differently and uses different pathways and different processes, then when there's a defect, there's no way to know which way, you know, actually created the defect. So the first thing we've got to do, and this is what we don't do well in healthcare, is to standardize the process that we're using for care. That doesn't mean that it's cookbook medicine, you know, and that sort of stuff. What it does mean is 80% of the time, and this has been well shown in many studies from LDS Hospital and other places around the world, 80% of the time, a standard process for care of almost any type of patient works. The other 20% of the time is where we, you know, use our professional judgment and differential diagnosis capacity and so that we can, you know, identify that, you know, well, this patient's not going to be able to follow that standard. But I think the key here is that we have very few standards in healthcare. Our processes are chaotic, whether it's for simple patients or complex patients, and we have to change that before we can actually improve the performance.
Gary, I have a question for you. Maybe you wanted to follow on this quickly.
I
noted that there is a kind of new division that's being created under the new leadership of the grandson, now running a Toyota, a division to actually get more closer to the customer and customer input in design. Now, that made me wonder whether healthcare is sort of maybe jumped ahead of Toyota in a sense in terms of thinking through more the kind of patient-centeredness. Now, maybe that's too big a sheen on that, but what's your thoughts on that? That it almost struck me as, where was the customer before?
Sure. Let me comment on that, and then if I can come back to the last prior question for a minute. But I do think that, you know, Toyota's always been really customer-centered. They've talked about it, but I think they've realized that they strayed from that, and sometimes when you create a new division, you create a structural solution. It's a way of emphasizing what has always been a core principle. I do think that healthcare in pockets is beginning to make major gains in becoming more patient-centered. I would still suggest that it is not nearly as widespread as it can be. Whether one admits it or not, many community hospitals across this country continue to, sometimes out of necessity perhaps, look at the referring physician and the admitting physician as the key customer. But we've made great progress, and I think by realizing we're in a very special type of business called healthcare, and that we deal with human beings, and we have the privilege of patients letting us into their lives at their most vulnerable moments, it gives us huge opportunities for improvement, to listen carefully. So on our improvement teams at Virginia Mason, on almost every one, we have patients and family members of patients. On our space design, what we call our 3P teams, we have often several patients or families of patients. And recently we've done some work on what we call experience-based design, where we've actually attempted to get to the feelings of the patients. So it's one thing to have a patient fill out a comment card, but by asking very directed questions of how did you feel when you were waiting on the gurney to go into surgery, for example. What we hear then create, and what we then can share with our patients, I mean with our staff, creates the kind of emotional moments that I think become very compelling to each of us that are trying to do the best we can in healthcare. So I think we got a ways to go, though, to get to where we need to be and truly being patient-centered.
Okay. Thank you, Gary Kaplan. Steve, I want to ask you a question that I think is kind of coming up, and that has to do with whether I think it has to do with maybe some of the people who are joining us today being a little overwhelmed at what it might take for kind of a total transformation, and we are talking in sort of big global terms today. Somebody has asked, is there a partial way we can go about this? Do I have to convince everyone? And I think maybe you could take that, Steve, and I'll sort of come back the other way to Gary and John as we start to wrap up, but thinking through also what kinds of things could folks who've joined this program today, the topic interests them, they know it's newsworthy, they may or may not be, they may be in very different places in the lean journey trying to figure out, where that applies. What would you suggest to people?
Yes, it's a great question. So when we go through, the core skills to generate and sustain this broad-based, high-speed, nonstop improvement and innovation, see every problem, emphasis on every 100%, solve every problem, share every learning, and as leaders be fully engaged all the time, people look at that and say, oh my gosh, we're pretty close to zero. And how do we get from zero to 100%? Well, I think the important thing to recognize is going from zero to zero plus is huge, because when you're not seeing problems and not solving problems, what you end up doing every day is squandering the most important resource, which is people's time. So you start small, even if it's just a few people, and you see problems that are regular impediments to their success. Solve those problems so that every time they do their work, they're more likely to succeed than they were. You give them time back. And if you give them time back, then they can see and solve more problems. And then as they start to see and solve and get really good at that, they can start sharing with other people what they've discovered. You go from zero to zero plus, zero plus plus, and before you know it, you get from zero to one, and then from one to two, and from two out to five, and then to 10. So don't be afraid. I know that sounds silly, but don't be afraid to start small, because as you start mastering these skills, your ability to apply them grows exponentially. On the other hand, if you actually try too big, you'll never master the skills and will have nothing but frustration. And I'll just conclude with a quick analogy. Kid learns to ride a bicycle because, they have the training wheels, they have the flat road, et cetera, the parents' hand on the seat. Give a kid a 10-speed bicycle with gear shifts and handbrakes, put them on that bicycle, they're never going to learn, they're just going to crash. So anyway, start small, don't be afraid to start small, make your big, huge ambition to go from zero to zero plus, and then things will snowball.
Thank you, Steve Speer. Gary Kaplan, I think I'll kind of come back to you. Some thoughts about, a place that, what kind of a discussion should somebody have tomorrow or next week? They were on this program. They were hearing about Lean and Toyota. What might you do to sort of start seeding some things kind of along the line Steve is talking about?
Yeah, I think it starts with being honest with oneself about the current state. And I think one of the challenges that many have in healthcare today is, for some of us it's hard to imagine, but I think it's still the case, is tremendous complacency. So by shining the brightest light on the current state, by understanding that the best places in the world to receive healthcare make mistakes and have defects and have waste and have staff who have tremendous burden of work, I think that's a critical step.
Mm-hmm.
Even when you start small, you want to start. You want to improve for a reason, and the reason is that we are nowhere near as good as we can be. And I think by understanding that, it helps us get started. I think the scope is critical. And as Steve mentioned, if you start too big and try to cure world hunger, you will fail. But I also think that small projects linked together can have huge impact, and I totally agree with the snowball effect. And then finally, I would have, and this goes back to a prior question that I wanted to comment on, I would have a low threshold for the standard healthcare response that healthcare is different and too unpredictable.
Mm.
In fact, I heard that many times. I still hear it occasionally. But you know, many things that we think are inherently unpredictable are predictably unpredictable, such as the emergency department. We were told, many of our staff said, well, you can't predict what's going to come into the ER. That's why they call it the ER. Well, yeah. It turns out that if you study it and map it and collect data on it within small areas of variation, you can predict how many patients are going to come in on Mondays versus Fridays or Saturdays. You can predict how many will need to be admitted. You can even predict with some certainty what their disease processes will be. And that kind of predictable unpredictability can help you plan and help take some of the people who are so highly skeptical and have them become champions with a few small projects that reduce their burden of work.
Thank you, Dr. Gary Kaplan. That would be all music to Eugene Litvak's ears as well.
Yes.
He was one of our guests on a prior WIHI talking a lot about patient flow and lots of interesting work there. All right, John Toussaint, all the way in Australia as your day gets underway. I didn't say mate. You will get the last word on the program today.
So I think, Madge, the key is here is just get started and focus on the problems that your staff and doctors have. You know, we learned lean from experts, from outside experts, from manufacturing experts. This is tough stuff, and you need some help to get started. But just get started. Get started doing Kaizen events. Get started doing value stream mapping. And start fixing some problems that your staff and physicians have had for the last 25 years. And once you get them, and once you fix some problems, they're going to get engaged. They're going to want more. There's going to be pull. You're going to have the snowball coming down at you because it's like, boy, this improvement stuff's pretty exciting. You know something? You fixed a problem that's been bugging me for 25 years. So now I'm starting to get, I'm starting to have hope that there may be a way to get out of this mess that we're in.
All right. Well, I think John Toussaint, Gary Kaplan, Steve Spear, you helped us have, I hope, was at least some food for thought kind of discussion. Obviously, we were sort of dancing in and around some very, very practical things and ways to get started. That's where I hope some of the resources will come in and be helpful to all of you. We have had three very good teachers today, and there are many more as well. And what I loved also was the message, go visit some healthcare organizations. You don't have to go to Toyota or visit some other manufacturers that have been thinking in these ways as well. Just very much related to today's discussion, IHI would like to let you know we have a new seminar called 10 Million in Savings, Reducing Hospital Operating Expenses While Improving Quality. And that's going to occur July 27th and 28th in Cambridge. This is on new strategies to reduce waste, MUDA. I don't know if we said MUDA today or not, while increasing quality. The information is just hot off the press on our website today, so check it out on the homepage, www.ihi.org. Again, I want to thank our guests. I want to thank all of the participants. There are over 1,000 of you on today. A reminder, as Jesse has been reminding you, you can download all the slides. You can download the chat from today. Any further questions that you might have that I'd be happy to see if our guests can answer, you can email info@ihi.org. Remember, this program is going to be on the archive page of the WIHI web pages, along with a very rich resource document. On the next WIHI, May 20th, 2 to 3 p.m., back to that time slot, we're going to hear about something called the primary care coach. And that sounds like maybe some Kaizen type of thing as well. Folks who are getting trained to help primary care kind of enter the new era with all the technology and many, many new expectations of primary care in our healthcare system. So we hope you'll tune in for that. May 20th, 2 to 3 p.m. There's information on our website right now about that as well. So those of you who joined today are helping us celebrate the one-year anniversary of WIHI, and we're going to wind up the program with some stats. Brittany McPhee put together this nice slide just to give you a sense of all our programs. I know some of you have had to go, but take a look and at what we've done, and I appreciate all of you who've tuned in. Keep on emailing us so we can do it better. The people who make WIHI possible are Jonathan Small, Mike Sweeney, Jesse McCall, Alan Olison, Brittany McPhee, Jane Rossner, and also Matt Morse, and Victor Vicki Minden if I didn't say Vicki. Maybe I'm saying you twice or three times, Vicki. And we have some wonderful music, original arrangements that open and close each show, but I'm going to spare you the names today just so we can begin to take you out. Thanks for another wonderful program. It's my privilege to host WIHI because it's about spirited learning and improving patient care most of all. For the Institute for Healthcare Improvement, I'm Madge Kaplan. Good day.